Good afternoon. I call this Committee on Human Services Finance to order. Members, we have a quorum present. Representative Pham, did you want to move the approval for minutes for March 12, 2024?
I would so do move.
Representative Pham moves the approval for March 12, 2024 minutes. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The minutes for March 12, 2024 are now approved. That members, we have a few bills today and hopefully will be done soon. The first bill that we have is House File 4158. Representative Hicks, I think she is on her way. We'll get started with my bill, which is 3642. Vice Chairman, we'll go to that bill.
All right, Mr. Chair, and I think I heard you actually already move your bill to have it placed before us, but just in case, House File 3642 is now before the committee. And with that, Mr. Chair, if you would like to go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a bill that we've already discussed and we had a thorough conversation. So the amendment, Madam Chair, I do have a DE amendment to reflect the discussion that we've had, so that we can put the bill in the shape that is going to work for all of us.
Excellent.
DE1. So I'll move a DE1 approval, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Chair Noor moves the DE1. Is there any discussion to the amendment? All right. Seeing no discussion to the amendment, we'll go ahead and go straight to the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right. And the ayes have it. And with that, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is an excellent bill based on the amendment that we just took, the DE1. This puts the bill in the shape that we'll be able to request the waiver from the Secretary of Health and Human Services, CMS. So I wanted to request the department just to give us any overview. I don't know if Christy is ready or if there's any conversation. I think we've covered most of these issues during the last discussion.
Does anyone from the department want to pop down? Like Ms. Graham is on her way down. All right. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to go ahead and state your name and your organization, and then go ahead and proceed.
Sure. Madam Chair, my name is Christy Graham. I'm with the Department of Human Services, and we have provided some technical assistance on this bill. So happy to walk through what the amendment does, if that would be of interest to the committee.
Yes, please. Thank you, Ms. Graham.
Okay, so the first section of this amendment really just requires the department to submit a waiver to allow for MA services 90 days prior to an individual's release from counties or jails. And it really just outlines, it really just outlines the requirements in the CMS guidance. And then subdivision two, just making sure that I'm looking at what this does exactly.
I'll go ahead and explain, Madam Chair. The subdivision two reflects on the eligibility requirement based on income and asset as the regular process for eligibility under this section 256B.055.
Okay, and then subdivision three really just limits the eligibility for correctional facilities. So this limits eligibility to three state correctional facilities, two facilities for delinquent children and youth, four correctional facilities that are essentially jails that are identified by the Minnesota Sheriff's Association and the Association of Minnesota Counties, and then one correctional facility owned and managed by a tribal government. That piece is something that we're still in conversation with the tribes about a little bit. And then really, this is the scope of the authority for this particular waiver. This is a waiver that we're looking, it's a huge effort, it's a transformational effort, but we do need to phase it in slowly and make sure that our Department of Corrections facilities and our jails and our juvenile detention centers are really prepared and have the infrastructure to be able to implement this waiver. And so this first phase would really be a small slice of correctional facilities to sort of demonstrate and pilot this and then add more facilities in the future. And then subdivision four is related to when services can be, what kinds of services can be provided in those jails and prisons and for what duration of time. And so this section really talks about the federal guidance, which allows up to 90 days prior to discharge to community. And so that's what this would allow. It identifies that a jail or a prison could use in-reach community services, so community providers that are providing a service, or if they are have the appropriate provider standards, they are able to provide those services themselves. And then it outlines the specific services that would be covered. So the three main services that the committee heard about, is it this committee or your committee, yep, heard about are medications for opioid use disorder, a 30-day prescription upon discharge to the community, and case management services, which are really more akin to care coordination. And what we are hoping that we'll be able to do in this demonstration, if the legislature authorizes it, would be to provide additional services. So mental health services, substance use disorder services, peer recovery, mental health peer services, treatment coordination, as well as some physical health services. And then, of course, an individual would have to meet medical necessity and an MA eligibility to get those services. And then subdivision five is really just outlining this provider requirements. These are conversations that we're still in, talking with Department of Corrections on to make sure that they're able to meet all of these provider requirements and they understand what they are. But that's an important part in terms of quality assurance. Section subdivision six talks about the payment rates. And so essentially each of the services in that previous list in an earlier subdivision will be paid at the payment rate that's already authorized in the state plan amendment. There is one service that's not discreetly authorized, and that's the care coordination service. And so then we set a specific rate for that one in this language. Subdivision seven establishes a reentry services working group. So this is something that other states have done. It's actually a learning that we've had with our 1115 SUD waiver. And so knowing that we kind of jumped right into that work and really needed more people from the community to help advise us and make sure that we were hearing from the ground how things were going and where we needed to make tweaks. So this does something similar, establishes a working group to really help us advise on what our waiver application looks like, our implementation plan, all of the monitoring and evaluation and data collection we'll be doing, and then making recommendations to improve the waiver. Section two is really related to managed care. And so this is just saying that all of the services that are provided under this waiver will be fee-for-service and exempt from managed care. There will be processes upon someone reentering community where they are able to, there will be connections made with their managed care organization so they can get onto managed care at that time. And then I think the one of the last sections is some grants for local local facilities to be able to build the infrastructure, the IT infrastructure, hire staff that they need to be able to implement this new billing system. And then section four is just a direction to the department to go ahead and do all of this. And so the I think our target date, I don't think I said that, is 2026. So this would be, this will take a while. I think we heard some testifiers say that probably programs aren't quite ready to do this, but that's why we're pushing this out. We want to do it thoughtfully, but we put a lot of work into working with other states and really understanding how we could implement this in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Grom, for that. And I know we did hear this bill before, and so I appreciate the technical assistance and you walking us through it. I think that's very much appreciated. Do we have any discussion or questions from the members? Looks like Representative Baker.
Always a comment from me, Madam Chair, on this issue. This is one of the top things we have to do this year. This is really important. I know our work on the ORAC Council, we've been talking about this for the last 3, 4, 5 years. This is a part of our community that has not been treated with any respect when they're getting out of incarceration, these reentry programs. We don't have any money, that's the problem. And I think that what we have to do is find out if there is gonna be a target for this committee and there is gonna be some money. We gotta make sure that this is one of those top tier items. The other issue and the hardest issue, honestly, is we have to make sure DHS has the capacity to get it done. It's easier said than done. But this has been a lot of work in the making. This has been a lot of conversations with the recovery community. This has been everything that we needed to do. It doesn't cover everybody, but it's a great pilot. It's pinpointed to certain areas. We got to get this done. Chair Knorr, I'm really supportive of this. So I'm going to put my name on the bill. And again, I'm doing it not because it's costing money, because that's hard to do right now. But we've got to find if there's a way to get anything done, and this is a top tier one. This is really, really important that we're having this conversation. And again, I just it's going to help those people, and it's doing everything we've been trying to get to with our ASAM accreditations, with our you know, the folks with the prior admissions issues that we're having, to get people to the where they need to be. This is just a big it's a very important bill. So. I'm rambling way too much, but this is a big bill. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Baker. Always appreciate those comments. And it looks like Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Chair Knorr. I just yesterday had two calls from members in my community that are having loved ones transition from incarceration and asking about the very things on here. So I appreciate the work that you've done with so many people. This is something that affects people in every community across the state, and I look forward to a different pathway, you know, for people that is more comprehensive and looking at the big picture. So I just wanted to say I support it too, echo Representative Baker, and thank you.
Thank you. And then I believe we have Representative Pryor on the list.
Thank you. This is a question that I have, and I also support the statements that have preceded me. But a question I have is, you know, in another set, in another issue, a different meeting that we've had, we talked about approval for administering different medications to people that are incarcerated. So is there any other kind of, is that covered in this legislation? Mm-hmm. It is covered, and so, or is this maybe also supporting other legislation that we would have to go along with it to make sure all the pieces are in place?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Grom.
Madam Chair, Representative, so medications for opioid use disorder are covered under this demonstration. I will say that there are several medications, you've heard about those, there's Suboxone, there's Naltrexone, and a very common one is methadone. Methadone is only paid under Medicaid, and as my understanding, under our opioid treatment program benefit, mm-hmm. which is also, as you heard recently, regulated by the federal government pretty heavily. And so there are some barriers to jails and prisons providing methadone, which I think is a problem that we're trying to wrap our heads around, because if someone enters a jail or a prison and they're already on methadone, I'm not a doctor, but I don't think you can just go right to Suboxone. I think you need to taper. And so there are still some barriers, just to be completely honest, to making sure that there's methadone in jails and prisons. We know of a few settings, correctional settings, that are trying to make their own OTP, opioid treatment program clinic, in that setting. Mm-hmm. But there will be other options for people, and we'll continue to work on expanding access, because that's really the underlying goal of this waiver.
And a quick follow-up.
Thank you, Ms. Grom. Representative Pryor.
Thank you. And the whole person, if they also have bipolar and depression and other kinds of medications, that would be also included.
Ms. Graham?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, that's correct. 90 days prior to release, and then that 30-day prescription upon release as well.
All right. Thank you. Any additional comments, Representative Fryer?
Thank you.
All right. Any other comments or questions from the members? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to let you give it back to you, Mr. Chair, to make any closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is an important bill. We've heard from so many community members why this is needed right now. And I think we'll keep on negotiating with the department in terms of the start time for the program and allow them to start establishing the process and protocols, and hopefully we can all rally around this bill and get it done sooner than later. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll renew my motion that House File 3642 as amended to be laid over.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, House File 3642 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Welcome to your committee, Representative Hicks. Please move your bill.
Thank you. I would like to move House File 4158 to Ways and Means.
Yes. Okay. That's the correct motion. Please introduce the bill and proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair and committee members. This bill we thought was just policy, but we weren't 100% sure, so we're presenting it here as well. This bill would allow individuals on medical assistance for employed persons with disabilities to renew once every year instead of once every 6 months, which has a lot of difficult processes to it, so that their premiums are set for a year, just like anyone else's health insurance premiums are set. Additionally, it would give a little bit more time to complete paperwork for reasons that are just paperwork and the mail, and if things are complicated, sometimes folks won't get their renewal paperwork until the day before it's due or 2 days before it's due, and then they have to collect all of this information and get that back and returned in a timely manner, or, you know, potentially lose their services and access to health care. So this just streamlines that process, creates a little bit less work for the folks utilizing the benefit and a little bit less work for our partners. So
thank you so much. I can see you've got a testifier, Mr. Woodley. Yeah. Please welcome to the committee and continue with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Noir and members of the committee. You know, I'm a recipient of the program, and I have been since 2017. And, you know, this program really allows people with disabilities to rejoin the community and workforce and maintain their benefits. You know, for me, it means I work at the University of Minnesota. I have my own company, and you know, I'm able to keep my home care and essential benefits that keep my life going. You know, this program was created 20 years ago, and it was a pilot phase, and you know, we're finally coming back and making adjustments now and last year and today. And I really want to thank this committee last year for eliminating the asset limit. It's made taking a huge relief off my head and a lot of my friends out there too. We still have a lot of work to do for those that are kind of trying to make ends meet on premium adjustments. And so hopefully we get to that soon. But really, you know, my experience, I've lost benefits temporarily. I'm not alone here, my friends. This is just kind of part of being in the program, because that window, you know, getting the paperwork 2-3 days ahead of time or that week, it takes about a half a day to a full day to pull all this paperwork together, and it's kind of ridiculous the amount of, you know, pay stubs and every little asset you have has to be recorded into this, you know, 11-page form, and then we have to do it every 6 months, so it takes quite a bit of time, stress. I don't have use of my hands, so I need somebody to help me with it. And so just it's not easy to make that around in time. And then you send it in. And I've sent it in and still lost the benefits temporarily because it takes time to process. So I'm hoping that we can make some reasonable adjustments here for myself and others. So, thank you. And this will also reduce administrative costs and burdens. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Woodley, for your testimony. I know last year we did remove the asset limit for MAEPD, and unfortunately we cannot do the premium. Hopefully we'll do something in the near future. So, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is a question for Mr. Woodland. And you've been in the program a long time, and you brought a lot of good testimony last year. I remember this very clearly in your advocacy for this for a long time. This renewing every year now, if this passes and it becomes law once a year versus twice a year, tell me that at least we've got the system set up so that it's a refill in the form that is mostly filled in by you, so it isn't really starting from scratch. Even if it's doing that and it's less work than maybe it's made out to be, tell me it's pretty seamless. If it's emailed to you, if we're using technology, are we getting to that point, or what's stopping us from doing that part of this program?
It's Mr. Woodley. It really isn't. And so, you know, I get a packet mailed to me, and then you can either fax it, which not that many people have. I don't have a fax machine. And most commonly, I go to the Hennepin. I live in Hennepin County, so I go downtown because I know there's staff there, and hand it to a case manager in person.
Yeah.
If the deadline's anywhere close to, because I know that's the only way it's going to get processed if I see it hand deliver it. You know, I would love to see state digital systems get updated so they're more user friendly. And, you know, I think in some aspects they are. In this area, they are not. And it might also be challenging because they're county by county right now. So it would be nice if there was like an umbrella under the state that counties could utilize or something.
Thank you so much, Representative Beck. As you can hear, that the Medicaid application process is paper-based, as we're still working on that. And I think we had made some changes. I don't know if there's any update from DHS in terms of moving to a different format other than using paper format.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ann Bops with the Department of Human Services. And thank you for the question. As you all may remember, the legislature did pass some significant investments for systems modernization last session. And we are very appreciative of those funds. We are still working to, you know, identify exactly how that process will work and under what timelines, but we are, you know, certainly interested in hearing these concerns from enrollees, because we do want this process to be better. And we, I think, all understand that these are very antiquated systems and there should be more streamlined ways to do this. So we are actively using some of the lessons we've been learning from the renewals process that we've been undertaking over the past year to inform where we might be able to go forward.
Mr. Chair, I just follow up with that. So with the money, with the investments that we've provided last year, what is the time frame, in your opinion, about analyzing, seeing where you're at? I get these are very high level words. Are we a year out? Are we 2 years out? What is it? What do you think your best guess is to help our citizens know that this system is being improved? We've spent the money. When might we see it done? Give yours your best shot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. I would have to follow up with the committee for that information, because this is, you know, an agency-wide effort, not just specific to our public health care program. So we'll be sure to follow up with the committee with that information.
Thank you. All right, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And along these same lines, when the author was my constituent, we sat down together and we came up with a bill proposal to try and get a portal. So the state did all the work, got uniform, and then the counties and the citizens that went to, you know, try and use the patchwork and weave their way through would be able to do something. And I ended up meeting with a group of 24 people are working on that update. And they said, well, we're midway through getting this together, and you know, don't do the bill until we get to another point because we don't want it interrupting our work. Well, I think there's been some, but there was nowhere near the work, and it's been a few years. I think you were a young lass back then. But
bothering people about this for a decade.
Yeah. it was, you know, probably close to a decade. But what bothers me is, you know, frankly, I have, since I've been here, a middle school girls team that generated an app, and President Obama greeted them at the White House. So that, you know, dates it a little bit too. The problem is we are not implementing stuff that's been around for over a decade for access. There's no reason why you can't have a voice operated, you know, something, you know, whether it's a phone with you, and you can activate it and you can have it grab this file, attach it to an email, and send it out. That you can't, if it, depending on the person, be able to, instead of entering, do a short video where you're answering all the questions and send it. We should have had that a decade ago. And because I've been involved with EIPs and special ed and other situations with a special education district, I know that there are wonderful apps out there that are on a tablet that can facilitate easy access to perform this. And we have the interface. So it's past where I have any patience to, well, we're doing this or we're going to do it. It'll be next year or the year after. No, we have to find out why it's not being implemented and get it done right and get it done soon. And if we need to have some legislators take more of a closer dig on the process, I think we need that. Because I'm tired of next year, because it's been a decade.
Appreciate your comments. I have Vice Chair Banner.
Thank you for that. So I actually have a couple questions. First, you said that the renewal process that you need to fill out all the paperwork happens every 6 months right now. Is there a reason that we're doing it every 6 months instead of, say, a year, for example? Because I have to assume that your position for the testifier does not change, generally speaking, within that 6 months. So I'm just curious why we're doing it every 6 months versus potentially a year, if there's something federally that's required.
No, so federally does require a year. So we would, I'm sorry, Chair Bonner, thank you for the question. We would have to do it yearly by federal. But the short answer is 20 years ago we set up the program and we said 6 months and we haven't changed it. It's in statute as 6 months. That's why I brought the bill to change it to a year. I think my testifier really highlighted that we haven't done a lot of work in this program to change things since we started it 20 years ago. The way we calculate the premiums, we haven't changed in 20 years. The frequency of renewal, we haven't changed in 20 years. The days necessary to complete the paperwork, like it needs to be updated. It needs to reflect what's really happening. The other thing I want to clarify is that just because it only has to be updated once a year, doesn't mean, like, should something dramatic change in someone's situation, they would still be required to report that change. So I just want to sort of clarify that.
I do want to comment.
Mr. Like, Woodley?
I think what you see written in the statute isn't what's, there's a lot more collected.
Correct.
On an 11-page form. So, you know, I think it's taking a look at why that information needs to be collected and, you know, can we just pull it off an annual tax return and average it and call that good. Why not?
Which, to note, when we had TEFRA premiums, that is what we did. So last year, you know, I brought bills to try to make these those programs equal, and we got TEFRA across the finish line, and we didn't get this one across the finish line. And so I'm back this year trying to run that last quarter of that race. So.
Okay.
Question, Yvonne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I appreciate that, and certainly I think, you know, there is a renewed effort, I think, in more times where to meet people where they are, to mm-hmm. say how can we streamline our process so that it makes more sense for the folks who need to use it. And certainly, you know, shifting from 6 months to a year with, the inclusion of if there's major changes, that those will be reported, certainly seems like it probably is a good move to make sense. I will just say, in terms of the modernization money, this is actually my bailiwick. And I will say that I know, for example, there are some, I've talked to Minute a number of times, there are some recent places in which we've put together portals to enter specific information. And I've been talking with them about whether or not some of that code is repeatable. It could just be rebranded for a new agency or a new particular usage. I think there's some things there. But one of the things that I do want to be clear on is that in this process, one of the things that we do is, one, we sort of do some research and analysis on the issue. We may often have some conversations with folks within the agencies about process and how things work, where things can be streamlined. So, and that generally takes a little bit of time first. And then really to say, do we have something in-house that we could use to build this out on our own? Or do we want to go with, say, some sort of product off the shelf or something of that nature? If that's the case, it needs to go through procurement, which, as you all know, takes a little bit of time. Or if we're going to build it ourselves, making sure that we have accurately reflected what the requirements are, what data do we actually need to collect, to your point, and which data maybe we have been collecting that really isn't necessary. And doing a thorough job of that, so we're not actually just putting extra undue burden onto the individuals. And certainly in an era in which we are very sensitive about the amount of data we collect and about data breaches, it makes sense for us to review that policy and say, what are we collecting and should we be collecting or not collecting? Because certainly we want to make sure that we are doing the minimum required to provide the service, but not more than that, that could put an individual at risk if that data were to be breached for some reason. So I do realize it takes a little bit of time. I get that. But certainly, and this is one where you know, Ms. Bobst, I would love, you know, as you progress through this, because I'm actually tracking a couple of other things as well, if you have some updates on where we're at in that process that you could provide back to me, that would be really great, because that will help me sort of keep an eye on tracking those things too and so forth. So I appreciate the work. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Representative Hicks, any closing remarks?
I just want to thank the committee, and to clarify, this bill does not do anything in the modernization, although I really appreciate the dialogue today about that. I think it is an important component. This is just changing the requirements for the person accessing services.
With that, Representative Hicks renews her motion that House File 4158 be referred to Ways and Means. You're on your way to Ways and Means. One second. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, the motion prevails. The final bill is House File 4422. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, welcome to the committee, please. I'll let you introduce the bill, but I'll move the bill, House File 4422, be referred to Health, Finance, and Policy. Please introduce the bill and proceed. And I see you have got an A1 amendment. Did you want us to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, please.
Can you briefly explain the A1 amendment, please?
In short, this is just to conform with the Senate language.
So I move A1 amendment. Any discussion on A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. So please, as amended, introduce the bill.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and Committee. Thank you for having me in this committee this afternoon. A little bit of light reading to end your committee today, so again, appreciate the attention. This bill was brought to me by the Health Licensing Board, specifically the Board of Executives for Long-Term Services and Support. And in short, it kind of clarifies any confusing legacy language, makes sure rule and statute matches up, and I will defer to my testifier for any in-the-weeds technical questions. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm Steve Jobe. I'm the executive director of the Board of Executives Long-Term Care Services and Support, also called BELT. The Board of Executives is responsible for the licensing of assisted living directors and nursing home administrators. The amendment to Section 144A.20 Subdivision 4 was intended to ensure that individuals serving as an assisted living director role of a facility meets the licensure requirements as quickly as possible. When the board's rules were adopted in April of 2021 for the first time, the infrastructure to implementing the license process was not developed at that time. Since that time, we have implemented not only educational standards, educational processes, but also license and renewal processes. The initial licensure primarily consisted of grandfathered or legacy implementation, which means that you met a certain criteria and you were let in. Between April 21 and August 1st of 2021, there were 1,713 licenses issued. By the end of that initial license cycle, there was 2,543 licenses issued primarily by legacy. So you did see the impact of the initial licensure rules. Today we have licensed 2,206 licensees. Part of this process is to clean up our language. We have since this year opened rules. We are working with many stakeholders to include MDH, DHS, Minnesota Ombudsman's Office, private providers, associations to include care providers, leading agents, small provider associations, educators to include the U of M, to rewrite our rules and to align all our statutes. With that, I will talk through some of the changes. Line 1.2 shortens the timeline from applying from 6 months to 30 days. With the amendment of the A1, removing language from 1.14 and 1.5 relates to the scheduling of training. The board believes that there is plenty of training available and it can be done timely, so that is what drives this change. The timeline in the original bills were based off the fact that the licensure procedures had not been yet established. The other amendments to the law include lines 2.1, which adds Minnesota licensed nursing home administrators to the bill, hence keeping the jurisdiction of the licensure in Minnesota. Our lines 2.14 and 2.15 are technical clarifications around continuing education instead of using the term training, which matches other statutes. The removal of line 2.5 through 2.13 removes all the legacy language. And with that, I leave it open for any questions that you may have or clarifications that I may provide the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Jobe, for your testimony. Do we have anyone in the public who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, member discussions? Representative Lesnicker.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill, and thank you to our testifier for being here today. I think this is a good bill. It's just going to clear things up and have a process be smooth, and we've moved forward following the pandemic and then a new initiation of licensure. So thank you.
Any further discussion from the members? Seeing none, your closing remarks, Representative.
Great, thank you. Well, I don't know if you guys saw me in policy the other day, but I like them short,
sweet and consistent. So thank you for the support. I do want to give an extra thanks to Representative Zeleznikar. With all of her experience in assisted living and nursing homes, I just ran it past her to make sure it was all good and appreciate taking a look and the support. So appreciate your consideration and support as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Hemisinger, for the bill. And so with that, members, I renew my motion that House File 4422 as amended be referred to Health, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. You are on your way to the Health Finance. Members, on Tuesday, we will not have our regular committee hearing. This will be the policy hearing on Tuesday. So the policy will be having that conversation instead of the finance. So no regular meeting on Tuesday for the finance. Well, Chair Fisher's here. Did you want to say anything, Chair Fisher?
No, just thank you to the to Chair Noor for allowing us to use this time so we can get our work done before deadline.
Absolutely. Deadlines are approaching. We want to make sure that we are done on time. So with that, we don't have any further agenda items. We are now adjourned.